The sales tie and the corporate grind for muddy boots and that Texas sunshine. Dorothy by his side on a 3-acre spread, 9-mile farmstead where the good life gets fed. 18 years of pockets dropping truth every day, helping you live better, tough times or not. That's what he'd say. Calls himself a redneck hippie duck farmer, y'all, with a jerk of a smile. Standing tall, redneck hippie duck farmer, down on 9 Mile Way, biochar in the garden like a bomb shelter for the clay. Ducks on the pond, pastured eggs in the pan, food forest growing while he lends a helping hand. Ditch the system, design your life, that's the law he wrote. Stacking silver, stacking sats, shotgun by
and we are live.
We don't have the new AI-driven redneck hippie duck farmer song today. I don't know what happened yesterday at the end of the show. I tried to play the whole thing for you on the YouTube channel, and it worked in the beginning. It didn't work in the end. I didn't want to jack with it today, and we had audio issues already today anyway, so I don't need to be jacking around with that. But I have the infamous Jesse Markowitz of your personal Bitcoin assistant on with us right now. He's just hanging out down there in his little box on the bottom, so you can't see him yet. But we're going to be talking about all kinds of things with Start 9, because Start 9 has evolved into a much more powerful tool than it was even just a year ago. It's been a while since we've had Jesse on, other than just his expert counsel segment, so I thought it was a good time to bring him on and tell you about all these new cool things that you can do with your Start 9 sovereign computing server. Before we do that, though, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. And, of course, we do have two of them as usual. Sponsor of the day number one today is Biltong USA. That's Anton von Vuren's company, where he makes some of the best Biltong I've ever eaten. And I do personally consider myself a Biltong connoisseur. But I also love, like, his new Drewers. I mean, he's had those forever, but he has now with Piri Piri Pepper. Oh, those are just the right amount of heat that hits you. The Biltong sticks are kind of my favorite. I cut them up with a pair of shears, and they're kind of like meat peanuts for the keto-minded among us. And then, of course, you have the Calabanazi sausages and the classic Biltong of many different flavors and forms. Check it all out at Biltong USA. And remember, members of the MSB, you get a discount on Biltong. I don't know if there's another program on the planet that gets you a discount on Biltong, so make sure you're taking advantage of that. If you're an MSB member, if you're not an MSB member, you could be getting a discount on Biltong. Come on. Sponsor day number two today. I had to do it. It really wasn't in the rotation. It was for tomorrow. I moved them forward because we have Jesse on today. Start 9, private servers. You want to check this out. You're going to want to really check this out after today's episode, and you learn all the cool things that you can do with a Start 9 server. People think about it from a Bitcoin standpoint, and yeah, you can run a Bitcoin node. You can run a Bitcoin Lightning node, but there's a ton of other things, as you'll see today, that you can do with a Start 9 server. And again, discount for MSB members, that's 9% on a Start 9 server. That can cover your MSB fee for quite a while. So if you're not an MSB member, and after today you're like, I want one of them Start 9 things, consider becoming an MSB member. All you got to do is go to thesurvivalpodcast.com and click on members and sign up there. It's $50 a year, 18 cents an episode to support the show that you tune into on a daily basis. With that, let me bring our special guest on. Of course, Jesse Markowitz. Jesse, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on. Good to see you.
We're having some technical difficulties today. Everything from choked up throats to audio not working, who knows what else.
That makes me nervous what's going to happen next.
Yeah, who knows, man? I mean, this is up there so far with when I had Patrick Seaman on, who literally created streaming video, and the video screwed up. Like, it was like the universe playing a trick on me. Anyway, we're going to talk about Start 9 today. Before we even get into that, though,
tell people, who is Jesse? I mean, I know you're on the expert panel. You're probably on the show at least twice a month. That's great. But there's people that may be tuning into this. They've never heard from you before. They don't know who or what a Jesse Markowitz is. So tell them.
No worries. So I'm a old school programmer. I used to write device drivers in C back in the day. Since then, I've gone a lot more into the customer support side of things. I've got a day job, fiat job, where I do basically a cloud service manager for a big cloud company. But my passion has really been in the Bitcoin space and in the personal sovereignty freedom space. And this is part of the Jack, you're a jerk. After a number of years listening to you, I finally got off my butt and said, you know what? You're absolutely right. I should start a little side hustle and do stuff. So I started yourpersonalbitcoinassistant.com, started helping people with Bitcoin issues, initially some crypto stuff, but pretty much it turned into basically straight Bitcoin. And then I found Start 9 actually through through Survival Podcast, caught up with Matt Hill and that crew. I do some contract work for them, and I've been very deep down the rabbit hole of that stuff. And I think it's great just from a raw technology. And I'm a technology guy, so I find that stuff interesting. But I also think it's amazing from a personal sovereignty, from a preparedness, from a privacy perspective. It's great stuff. So anything I can do to let more people access it, that's what I try to do.
Cool, man. Hey, let's start off with, for people, again, that might be tuning in for the first time or just have never really considered Start 9 before, so they've only seen kind of the surface, very surface level. What is a Start 9 server in the first place? Before we even get into the updates and what it can do, what is it? What does that mean?
You know? Absolutely. So in the olden days, you know, 5 years ago, whatever it was. If you wanted to run a server, you had to be a Linux geek. You got to be pretty serious, hardcore stuff on that. And it was hard. And there's a lot of updates. There's all that command line stuff, all of that. It was difficult. And even if you were a Linux geek, and I don't claim to be super hardcore on that, but, you know, I ran my Linux servers, but it was a pain in the neck. And trying to run something for my family, for my house, for small business was just too much work. And so what do people do? Well, you go to Google and you run Google Docs and you run Gmail and you go to Box and you go to OneDrive and you go to Microsoft 365. You go to all this online software where you basically give all of your data to big tech and they run everything for you. And you just pay them 10 bucks a month here, 20 bucks a month there, 100 bucks a month there, whatever it is. And you've got no control. They use all of your data for marketing, for training, for whatever stuff they do. Sometimes there are special agreements where they say they don't, but they still technically have access to it, even if they're not supposed to do anything with it. How do you really know? And so up until Start 9 came along, it was really hard for people to run their own personal server. So now there's a couple different products out in the market. Start 9 is one, Umbral is another. There's a couple others as well that are designed specifically for the home market where you can plug it in and then kind of add these extra services in place to run stuff locally in your home on your own hardware where no one else has to know about it. No one else has access to it, control of it. It's all you. And all of these pretty much started in the Bitcoin community, because in the Bitcoin community, it's, you know, you got to trust but verify. You want to run your own node. And as hard as it is just running a Linux server, trying to run a Bitcoin node, if you're not really in that space, It's challenging. It's non-trivial. So if you had a box you could just plug in and run a Bitcoin node, that's easy. So that was a lot of the first marketing angle on this. But the beauty of Start 9 was it was not designed to be a Bitcoin node. It was designed to be a home server. Mm-hmm. So all these other services you want to run, you can run. We'll talk about that a bunch as we get in on this.
What are some of those new services? Because that's what we're here to talk about, some of the latest updates. I found that there was a lot of really cool stuff there available, but there was also like a lot of things like, would the average person really run that, right? Like the Bitwarden stuff, that's password manager. Password managers are great, but I think there's some things now that people might get a little bit more excited about having access to.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we talk Bitcoin nodes, and if you're on the Bitcoin side, a Bitcoin node, Lightning, and all of the associated services around that, that's great. But if you're not a Bitcoin person or you're a Bitcoin person, but you don't want to run your own node, there's still a tremendous amount that you can do. if you're on the current version, current production version of StartOS 0.3.5, you have access to all the services that are available there. There's about 50 or so, plus or minus, which is a good number. The new version, 0.4 version, has a whole new packaging scheme. There's a whole bunch of new packages on it. So right now I'm in the process of converting everything in my life over to running on my Start 9. So conference calls, I used to do a bunch of calls on Teams or on Zoom. I am now moving that to Jitsi, and I've used Jitsi a lot, but now I'm going to self-host Jitsi.
Okay.
So I can run that myself. If you use Calendly or cal.com for people to schedule appointments with you, there's a Cal DIY, which is basically cal.com for the self-hosting version. That's now available on Start 9. If you ever use any cloud storage, so you do something like OneDrive or Box or Dropbox or any stuff like that, you can do that on your own server. If you use Google Docs, you can do that on your own server. I actually was the person who initially packaged, and I'm working on doing the updated package for CryptPad, which is an encrypted version of basically Google Docs. So if you and I wanted to share a Word doc or an Excel doc, whatever, we can do that, but host it on our own server. If you want to do password management, you mentioned already, mm-hmm. I do my task management. So if you're an Asana user or Google Keep or anything like that, there's an open source package called Vicunja. I have no idea where they came up with the name. I don't know. But it's a evidently.
Oh, that's a tech bro sitting around. We need a name that sounds really cool, and no one will know what it is or what it does, but we'll tell them anyway. And
I have no idea.
Vicunja. That's a good name. I think, bro. No, that's it, bro. Vicunja. High five, right? Like, yeah.
But I can't tell you where they came up with it, but when I started doing my comparison, like, what's the open source package so I can get rid of Asana and do my own to-do list and my own task management internally? This was, like, by far the best. I'm like, great. So I actually was the one who packaged that and went ahead and packaged up for Start 9, got it going, everything else. So I'm, again, in the process of moving everything cloud subscription onto my Start 9 box. Oh, I'm sorry. I totally forgot. AI. You've heard a whole bunch of stuff about OpenClaw. Guess what? There's an OpenClaw service for Start 9. If you do Hermes, which is the one that actually like a little bit better than OpenClaw, there's a Hermes service for Start 9 as well. Absolutely.
I have a question for you on the AI thing.
Yeah.
The amount of compute that these large language models use is amazing.
It's
so
huge.
How does somebody using maybe my gamer PC here or anything run an AI client that really can do the kinds of things that I can do with Gemini or the advanced features? Like, is it just kind of like a little play toy or is it just like a limited thing? Because I just don't see the compute necessary. And this is a pretty damn badass machine over here because I bought it beefed up for video editing, but it is not, a rack of freaking GPUs in a data center.
So there's three answers to that.
Okay.
The first answer, the quick answer is poorly.
Okay. All right. That's the honest answer. All right.
That's the quick answer. The first answer, poorly. The second answer is it's effective for certain targeted scenarios.
Okay.
So, for example, one of the ones that I'm working on right now, I haven't gotten in place yet, working on it, is there's a package that I package called N8N. It's like If This Then That or Zapier or a workflow package, but it basically allows you to put workflows up on the screen, and then each of those nodes on there has a whole bunch of potential code behind it, like read my email, do a web search, call an AI using this API key and do this work. But because that's a batch process type of stuff, this specific use case, right, I can set that up where I can say, listen, I want you to whatever that is and run it overnight. And I don't care when it comes back. I'm not sitting there waiting on it. So part two is particular use cases. The third answer is if it's highly tuned, it can work as well. So if you have a chatbot for a website that is not solve differential equations chatbot, but it's a customer service. I got a pool of answers. It's very specific.
Yeah.
Those are three answers to your question.
So like if I had jackslaws.com and I set up a chat bot on there that was like all my common customer service bullshit.
Yes.
I can condense that data very easily, yes. And then its job is to talk to my potential customer and say, yes, the reason you haven't been able to log in is because you didn't set up an account, dummy, right? Or whatever it is. Like, it can do that. And it sounds like the second use case on some level, basically, you're using some other AI's compute, and you're just kind of you're walling off identity or something because you're using an API call.
The N8N gives you the option. Okay. So for my testing purposes, I have used it externally, and I've used my Claude API tokens and keys for that sort of stuff, and I've done that. But you can also point it to your local inference. So you can point it to your local box as well.
Okay.
Either way. The best part about it is you can actually do both. So you could do your web search, tell me about all the news in the Middle East, send that out to Claude or GPT or whoever else you want to do that, Gemini, let them do that work for you, come back, and then you want to send an email or whatever else. Building that email, that's a little more private. You want to be a little more controlled on that.
Yeah,
that
might be your
local AI. Yeah.
If I was running some sort of client email service like newsletter, I can basically use this as an aggregator on the open market and then on my closed door side as an aggregator to compile it into something deliverable and send it.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
So running AI locally is still a challenge. It's gotten a lot better than it was. StartOS 0.3.5, the way that the internal architecture was, did not allow you to really leverage the GPU and all that other stuff in that hardware. So you could run an AI model locally, but it was CPU only. So it was really challenging.
Yeah.
0.4 was rewritten from scratch, basically. And they included all of that pass-through hardware. So now if you've got a video streaming box, whatever else, with all that GPU capability, you can take advantage of that in your StartOS server.
All right. So the 1% of you that got something from that, you're welcome. Now we'll talk about the things 99% of the people actually understand. What are some of the latest updates? What are some things that are more usable by the average person?
So here's the big announcements, if you will, the latest updates from Start9. Number one is the current version has been the current latest version for 3 years, a little bit more. The new version has been coming soon, coming soon, coming soon forever. It went through 20 or 21 alpha versions. It is now currently on beta 9. Beta 10 should come out, I think, sometime this week. And it is very, very close to final. So the big deal in terms of the new version is the new architecture I talked about before, which gives you the pass-through hardware. But the biggest thing really is that it gives you ClearNet capability. It lets you easily put your StartOS server on the internet. So in the past, when you wanted to talk to your box at all and you were at home, it was fine. You just did whatever your name was, .local and all your stuff, and it was great. But if you were outside your house, in order to get to it, you either needed to do complicated networking stuff or you needed to use the Tor, the Onion Routing Network, which is just slow, inefficient, and painful to use, but not something that regular people could do. So one of the big things about all of this has been the whole ClearNet aspect of things. So that's been a huge, huge plus on that one. In addition to that, you might appreciate this as well. If you're already running a Start9 server, if you want to change the name, now you actually can.
Okay.
I remember at the workshop, I don't remember what the name was, but I'm doing a live demo, and the name of it, whatever came up, was somewhat inappropriate.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was. I was like, oh, man, only in demos. But now you can just type in whatever name you want to call it. You're good. Okay. All of that stuff is in place as well. So that's all to the good. In addition to the StartOS update, Start9 has also been looking at, well, what are the other key blockers that are keeping people from actually being able to use this stuff and be sovereign in their house? And there's really been two aspects of it from the networking side. One is, even if I have my Start9 box and I put it on the internet and it's out there, then everybody coming to it has to see my home IP address. That's how they get to it, which in some respects sort of doxes myself, right? It kind of reveals where am I at. You know, I think I one of the expert counsel questions, I think I answered this as well, right? It was something like 99% accuracy to the country level. And I think it was something like 60% accuracy to the metropolitan area. It's like that type of stuff. Yeah, so absolutely crazy on that stuff. So the second part is Start Tunnel, which allows you to basically get a remote server real cheap. I'm paying $20 a year for one of them. That becomes your external face to the world that has your IP address. So basically, you can still do ClearNet, but it's all that way. And then the other one that they're working on right now is a router. So most folks today have a like a cable modem or some sort of, you know, box where we bring the signal into their house, mm-hmm. and then a router that gives them Wi-Fi, they plug whatever else into it, and all that sort of stuff. Anyone who's ever used a router, if you're not a super techno geek, they are horrible. They're non-intuitive. They're miserable to use. About every 3 years or so, I go through an exercise where I go, okay, it's time to replace my router. Let's see what the latest and greatest is. I keep hoping that they'll have something that's usable by like a regular person. And they never are. They're horrible. And on top of that, now they've got all this AI and advanced features, which are the features that I want.
Yeah.
But they're not built in. Basically, what I have to do is I have to say, okay, ASUS, take all of my data, expose everything that I'm doing locally, ship it all up to your servers, you AI it, and then you tell me what I'm doing. Well, I don't want to do that. The point of running my own router is that I can run my own stuff. So what StartOS has done is they took an open source router software, WRT, which is incredibly powerful, and they put a wrapper on it, kind of like they did with StartOS, take this very powerful Linux subsystem and give you an easy GUI on top to let you do exactly what you want to do. And that's what they put in place on that. So StartWRT, that is built. It's completed. It is in testing right now. If folks want to pre-order it, router.start9.com. They're taking pre-orders now. The shipping date on that, I think, is listed in September. I'm expecting that will probably be somewhat sooner. And I've seen the demos. I've given some input on some of that stuff. It is amazing. One of the things about it, which is really cool for the router side of things, is it lets you do things like, I have 5 kids in the house. I'd like to give them different privileges. I'd like them to have Wi-Fi at different times of the day. Mm-hmm. I'd like them to be blocked on certain websites or whatever magic you want to do. I can create a profile and say, kids. I can create a profile that says guests. I can create profiles for all this different stuff. And then anyone coming into my house, instead of trying to figure out, like, how do I get them tied into that? When they ask to use the Wi-Fi, I just give them a Wi-Fi password specific to that profile.
That profile. Okay, yeah.
Right, because normally you've got, you know, your home Wi-Fi, and then maybe you've got a guest network. That's it.
That's
and then if you want to set any like crazy rules on it, you got to like go deep in the guts to set the rules, and it's horrible, right? But this way, everyone coming in, you give them a different password, they get a different profile. Keep it all straight. It's just brilliant UI approach, works really well, and looking forward to actually getting that out in production.
That's really cool. I have a TV Deco system, and I'm not going to say it's hard, but it doesn't have that much control down to the individual level without it being really a pain in the ass. But they did recently add AI to the app to make things better, and the AI is basically a salesman trying to sell me all their shit.
Yes,
right.
Exactly.
You detected a vulnerability. No, you didn't. You just want me to buy your additional firewall bullshit. Like, you know, you should be storing your stuff here. No, that's cloud storage you're trying to sell me. Can I make this tab and go away? And because every once in a while I click on it, and all this bullshit starts coming up, and I'm like, you know, the other day I was installing a new printer on the network, and like I go in just to make sure it's connected, and it starts trying to sell me like on like some sort of print server technology. Like, I just want to print guest forms. Leave me. Yeah. I just want to make sure the printer is actually on the network. Leave me alone. Yeah. It would be cool if it was like you're saying, straightforward.
Now, the other thing is, I don't know your router system or whatever else, but for a lot of them, in order to do that work, they don't process that locally.
Yeah.
Which means, Jack added a printer to his network. That might go back to their corporate headquarters where they run against their AI there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I don't let them do anything with their AI.
exactly.
I don't know that I can replace that because I've got a big place, and that's why I have Deco, because I have these remote access points all over the place. So I don't know if they're going to have something like that.
It is an argument I had with the original developer
that
I lost. And I told them, share the code. I will dig in. I'll get you. I'll use AI. Whatever. I'll create a pull request. I'll actually write some code for you to do that, because I'm in your boat. What I want to do is I want to have two of these tied together with my Ethernet cable, Wi-Fi on both, and have one integrated system across my entire setup.
Yeah, that's exactly what I've got. I've got three. I got primary access, and I have three access points on the compound on top. So I have four access points. And I like what you're saying, but I'm not giving that up, because I have full on network capability in my back shop, out by my garden, everywhere. So and I can have, you know, 80 of you guys being retards on my network in the fall, and it doesn't fall over. So
right. Yeah. Day one, depending upon how quickly I can get at this stuff, if I can do anything, or if I can convince them to make a change on this.
Yeah.
Even in a worst case situation, you could at least have all of your other access points be on like the guest side of it, the guest profile.
That would be cool.
Stuff like that. And that would probably do 75% of what you want.
Yeah. So you mentioned packaging services. First, explain what the hell that means to the average person and why they should care, because most people aren't going to be coding up apps and things like that. But today you probably could do it a hell of a lot easier than 5 years ago, because we have these tools that help us with at least the primary part of the coding now. But this matters too, because it's why you can get all this new cool shit, because if you make it easier for developers, they'll make new shit for you.
Yes, that is perfectly well said. So let's start with, what does it mean? So if you want to install something on your Windows server, your Windows Hope device at home or whatever else, someone has to write a package. They got to write something about it, like a Windows installer, so it can work and install. On the server side, it's the same thing. There's a number of different ways that you can do that, whatever else. StartOS has its own operating system, has its own packaging rules and everything else that allow you to do this. And in the older version, it took a fair amount of work. It wasn't that bad, but it could take a couple of days or a week for somebody who goes, I have this program I want to offer it to everybody, to package it so somebody in StartOS could click the button and bring it in. It could take a couple days to a week, right? The new version has been specifically designed to be AI packaging friendly. So the documentation, the way the SDKs are written, everything is all set up. So it's very easy for the AI system to do it. The goal, we're not there yet. Matt gets on some of these podcasts. Matt Hill, the founder of Start9 and one of the key developers on it, will talk about his vision. And I'm like, yes, I love it. We're not there yet. I've tried this. It doesn't work yet. We're getting closer. But his vision basically is, we get to a point where Jack says, hey, I want to run print management software on my Start9.
Okay.
Rather than figuring anything out like I do right now, Jack goes, types into his AI bot, goes, hey, what's the best open source print management software I can get for StartOS? And he gets back the answer, goes, but it's not packaged. It's great open source software, but not packaged. Would you like me to package it? And you just type into the AI, please package this for StartOS. Here's the StartOS documentation for packaging. Here's the GitHub repository where all of the open source code is. Go to it. And let the AI take a swag at it. When it's all done, it gets you a file that ends in .s9pk that you load into your Start9 server, and you run it. We're not there yet.
Okay.
But we're not that far off.
You got me all excited. I'm like, really? 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 But we can't do it.
But I will tell you, here's where we're at right now. I'll tell you where we're at right now. What I do right now, when I want to package a service, is I have a conversation typically with Claude. I've done ChatGPT too. But basically I say, this is the service I want to package. I want to do it for StartOS. I've got a whole bunch of context already built around packaging for this stuff. So my AI knows what I want to do, knows some of the basics on it. I have it point out to the Start9 information, the repositories, the documentation, everything else. And I work with it to say, what would it take to make this package work? What are the design decisions? How do we want to implement it? And I work through all that stuff. And when it's all done, I ask AI to help me. How do I work with AI? I go, AI, build me a prompt based on everything we've talked about that I can give to Claude Code to build the package.
Okay.
And it does a decent job. But then I go through it again. I go, okay, this isn't right. That isn't right. It, because I've got domain knowledge, I know about this stuff a little bit.
Yeah.
I tweak it. I you know, I dodge some of the potholes.
So where we are, if I hear you right, the person that could code it can code it faster.
Oh,
and
dramatic.
The person that can't code it still can't.
I would say the person who knows something about coding but is not a guru programmer with it
can. Okay.
Because I am not a guru in this at all.
So the person that could almost code it without AI can now code it with AI.
Absolutely.
The person who doesn't know how to lay down any code at all, they're not there yet. Okay.
Right. But the differential on this is for CryptPad, which is the one that I happen to particularly really like. This is like the Google Docs version. On StartOS, when I first wanted that, and I said, let's get this, nobody particularly wanted to do it. So I did a Kickstarter, a fundraiser for it, right? That I hosted actually on my own Start9 server using BTC Pay server. So I did this, Kickstarter type fundraiser for it, raised some money, found a developer willing to do it, and it took like 2 weeks of coding, a week of coding to get the alpha, another week of coding to get it to like a solid beta later on that I had to fundraise for and pay the guy. Now I've had people go, hey, Jesse, could you do this one? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I kind of like that, too. Let me just do it. And because I'm not that guru programmer, again, Matt Hill, some of those guys, they might be able to knock it out, in a day or something. For me, it takes me a couple of days. But still, that's not bad. It's a huge step forward, and in the pace of AI, it's getting faster and faster.
Yeah, one of the things I always remind people about AI, I read in Jeff Woods' book, and it is, just remember, the version of AI you're using right now will be the worst version of AI you will ever use. That will never change. Like 3 weeks from now, that will be true, and 2 years from now, that will be true.
Exactly.
So it'll get better.
Yeah.
In spite of the fact that it's upsetting so many people, but
so the result of this easier packaging and all the rest of that is a whole bunch of people like myself who before would never have considered it have said, what the hell? Let me give it a try. And I've started doing it.
Yeah.
So again, I mentioned before for 0.3.5, there's like 50 packages. There's about 150 right now that I know of. There's probably at least another 50 that people have done. That they just didn't post it someplace that I've heard about it yet, but they've already done it and they're already using it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And more are coming every day. The biggest backlog right now is actually that Start9 doesn't have like the app store, right? The marketplace. The back end infrastructure to take all of this input that people said, oh, I packaged this thing. Can we get it out there? Can other people see it? Is not in place yet. So that is a much more manual process right now. And so that's been taking a lot longer to get some of that stuff out there. Yeah.
I think they'll square that away in time, too. Because
that is top priority. We're going to work on it now.
This box is becoming the server version of WordPress.
Yes.
Right. So what WordPress did that was genius in the beginning with their open source was, and anybody can write a plugin. If you know SQL and PHP,
you can
go forth and code. You want to charge for it? Fine. You want to put tracking on it and give it away for free? Fine. You want a freemium and a premium?
Yep.
We don't care. Make it do. So now, if you're building a website, unless you have some very specific requirements, and you know why you're doing what you're doing, right? And you don't want to be locked into somebody's site builder bullshit where you have to pay for every feature you want. And you're like, I want a site. I want to do these 10 things. Just use WordPress. But shut up. Use WordPress. There's already a plugin that does 9 of your 10 things. Go have one custom plugin made and shut up. And I think that's what Start9 is trying to do is get to where I want to run a server at home. Get a Start9 box. But I want it to – don't worry. Just get a box and plug it in.
Somebody's either created that package for you already or if not, it's trivial to do it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, because you're doing it open source and the knowledge is there, that means that somebody can do it, right?
Yes.
That's
exactly.
The thing. Somebody with basic coding capability can do it. From what you're saying, it sounds like it's a lot easier to package up a piece of open source software into a Start OS package than it would have been to code a WordPress plugin from scratch 10 years ago.
Oh, God, yes.
And there's billions of those. Right? You can't name something you want a website to do, and I bet you I can find 10 plugins.
I bet you could.
You know, so I think that's where we're going with this. That's really cool.
Yeah.
What are some of, like, the networking capabilities that we have? We kind of mentioned the router thing coming, but there's networking just means communicating from different points. So what can we do there?
So it used to be that if you were talking to your server on their local network, it was pretty easy. You could have whatever your name was, .local, and whatever, and you got to it, it's fine. Outside your local network, communicating to start with a server was really hard, trying to get that communication in place. And some of the shortcuts that they took to make it easy, there's plug and play locally, made it much harder on the internet side. So in the internet world, everybody basically has an IP address. That's your internet protocol address. This is how do I find you on the internet? And then a port number, which is kind of a, which mailbox within that server do I need to talk to? That's the basic idea on it. And in the old version of StarOS, it didn't respect that. So even if I could get to the IP address of my server, I couldn't get to different ports for different services for whatever else. And so that was partially where that whole rewrite had to occur, was to make it so that on the StarOS box itself, it would be designed to support that IP address and port number and everything else. So now all of your services, when you install them, they get port numbers. And, you know, some programs have more than one interface, so they have more than one port number. And then if you want to get to it, you just have to get to your IP address and port, and you can get to it easily. So that's at the technical bits and bytes level, right? But if you want to, if you've got something like your personal BitcoinAssistant.com domain that you own, or the SurvivalPodcast.com domain that you own, and you want to have something like workshop.thesurvivalpodcast.com and have that point to your StartOS server and have that be, It'd be members.thesurvivalpodcast.com. And then you would self-host the members area of Survival Podcast locally. You could do that. And if you wanted to have somebody say, you want to book an appointment with me, and I want to do Calendly, cal.com, whatever else, it might be meetme.thesurvivalpodcast.com. And meet me just translates inside to cal.com package for StartOS. You're running locally on your machine, everything configured, all on your stuff. But to the outside world, it looks like you could be running some huge data center in Amazon, AWS, GCP, Azure, whatever else it might be, but it directs to you.
That's really interesting. I mean, it makes me wonder, like, you know, for workshops, can we do workshops dot and, you know, maybe replace Telegram? Because we use Telegram to, like, a session is starting, dinner is
absolutely. Like,
so we could basically move everybody to their own little private localized network while we're running an event where all the comms are local.
Absolutely. You could absolutely do that.
Just have to get everybody to do it. It's hard enough to get them all to install Telegram and use that too, some of y'all.
Well, that was actually the thought that I had. That was exactly where I was going. But having said that, there is actually a service called Notify, NTFY.sh, that is specifically designed for alerts. And what's really cool about that is it's open source. And so I was looking at it one day. I said, well, crap, I would be nice. I want that in my StartOS box. So I went ahead and I packaged that for StartOS. Okay. So there is now a Notify service on StartOS. In all fairness, I'm not currently maintaining that package. StartOS looked at it and said, we like that one. So thank you very much, Jesse, for bringing it to our attention. We're going to take control of that.
Okay.
And we're going to own that and upgrade it, and we're going to manage that one.
Because what does that do, though? Like, how would that work? Like, how does Notify actually notify?
Here's the part about it that's really pretty cool. You can run it as a progressive web app on your phone. So you can go to it like a website.
Oh.
And so all you have to do on, like, an iPhone or an Android, you don't need, like, all sorts of crazy back-end push and whatever else.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? All you have to do is tell them, you put the little QR code at the front of the room, go to this website, and when you first go there, instead of just going to it in your browser, install it as a progressive web app. It becomes an icon on your phone.
Yeah.
And when a notification comes in, it shows up with a little light or whatever else, boom, and you get notified right there, and it's right there.
So on like something like a shitty iPhone, what you do is you go to that URL in Safari, and you basically hold it down and add to home screen is what you're saying.
Yes, okay. Yes, exactly. And then it automatically does the notifications. I use that in production right now.
When, I like that.
Yeah.
We can make people do it.
Yes.
We can make when people sign in the beginning of the day and they're there with you know my wife and Teresa and I'll mm-hmm, give them their money mm-hmm. do it. You don't get your badge until you do it.
It's easier than that, Jack. You know what? Yeah. You just put out a notice on Notify. You put it up on the front of the screen in front of it, right?
Yeah.
Put this in and look for the notifications. Set that up, right?
Yeah.
And then when they show up, they just go, "What's the secret code?" If they don't Notify. They won't know what the code is. Okay. Send it out that way.
All right, yeah. Then you need to do it now. Here's the QR code. Scan it and do it, right? Because it wouldn't. I just like so. Just for people that are like, what the hell are they talking about? I run this workshop. If you're new here, every year at my place, we have usually about 55, 60 student seats we sell, and then we have staff and all. We have like 80 people on my place, and then we have all this crazy shit going on, and it's like herding cats. Like we're starting this session. There's an impromptu session over here. We're doing this thing now. It's dinner time. We have a booze tasting going on and out back, whatever it is. And what I should do is just be like, hey, we're doing it now. And then if you don't come, screw you. But I feel guilty. If you don't come because you're not interested, I don't care. When people show up, they're like, well, when was that tasting? Oh, we did that an hour ago, bro. Right. And they were knocked out in their tent or something. I feel guilty. I want to make sure that everybody has the chance to do all the things that are going on if they want to. It's something like that. Because that's what I've always done with the Telegram thing and immediately being muted or whatever. And like,
But the part about this, which is really nice, is that you can have a whole bunch of different codes that you listen on that you want to be notified about. So if you wanted to, you could actually set up Notify. And just like you do with Telegram, right? You have different groups in Telegram.
Yeah.
You could do the same type thing with Notify where you could push out like everything or just for the primary presentations or for special stuff or whatever else you might want to do. You could have a group just for presenters.
And those people don't necessarily have to be local. I'm just running it local. So that person could be with their phone anywhere. Right?
Instead of going to ntfy.sh, you go to notifications.survivalpodcast.com, however you set it up.
Or Jack's Laws or whatever, and I could push
Jack's
out like
Laws. Absolutely.
One law a day for discussion or something.
Yeah, right. Yeah, absolutely. And people would basically subscribe to that if they wanted to.
I like cool that. And they don't have to be doing all my crazy nerd shit. All they have to do is scan a QR code
on that
thing and say add to home screen.
Go to a website.
People that don't get the progressive web app thing, I don't think you understand. It's actually easier to install a progressive web app on your phone than an app. Because an app, you got to go to the app store. You have to prove that you are who you are, all that.
And it's 10 times better because there's no blocking by the app store.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have to get approved by the app store. You can't get revoked by the app store. There's none of that. I don't have to
pay them a 20% extortion fee if you happen to buy something from me, right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
so that's great that folks can now get to your StartOS server. But now the problem comes in that now your StartOS server is like really on the internet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yikes. So how do you want to protect that? How do you do that? So the first thing is you may not want your home IP address and your home router being aware, whatever, visible to the rest of the world.
Yeah.
So StartTunnel is a virtual router. Okay. Basically, it's a chunk of software that's really, it's drop dead easy to install. It's literally copy and paste one line into the command line, run it, and it's done.
Okay.
And it all comes up. It prompts you for everything it needs. You don't worry about any of it. But it doesn't do you any good if you run it at home because you're still on your home IP, your home address, everything else. So what do? You get a VPS, a virtual private server. So this is something that you do rent out in the cloud. It does not have to be hard. It is not expensive. I've got one right now. I rented literally for $20 for a year. Okay. It's not a high-powered server, okay?
Because it's not like a VPS where I'm, like, hosting my whole site and everything. It's basically a redirection thing.
Absolutely. This is not a case where we're going to do all of your downloads off of it or anything else.
Yeah, like yeah. That,
right?
Yeah.
It's basically just a pointer in the internet.
It's a proxy.
It's a proxy, right. Now, if you are, and in your case, Jack, it might be an issue because if you're doing hundreds of thousands of downloads a day and you put out the note about, hey, the workshop is starting and you get a whole bunch of traffic coming through at one time, that VPS can easily get overloaded. So even if your start OS server is really big and beefy and prepared, the path to it, that might be a problem, right? So just to be aware on that. So what Start Tunnel does, and particularly for less technical people, is it lets you go, oh, which VPS provider do I want to do? Go there, create an account, get a VPS server, log into it, pour in one line of code, and that's it. Now you got a Start Tunnel out there. And in Start OS, it will tell you like what you need to configure on Start Tunnel. So if you want to do notify.jaxlaws.com, there's something in called port forwarding so that all the traffic works correctly. Even if you're non-technical, if you bring up Start OS, it will tell you this is what you need to do. You go to Start Tunnel and you go, okay, let me just copy and paste. Yep, put that across. And then Start OS has a little test button where you test it. If it doesn't work, it'll tell you. So that's what Start Tunnel lets you do, is it basically gives you that virtual router that you can route all that inbound traffic so it doesn't hit your home IP address. In addition to that, it also lets you use that as an outbound gateway. So right now, if you're running a Bitcoin node and you're talking to other Bitcoin nodes and you're sending stuff out, most folks have that configured so it goes out through the Tor network. So it's not as privacy-inducing, invasive, but it's not as fast, efficient, all the rest of that, reliable.
Yeah.
When you start doing that on ClearNet, now you're exposing your home IP address potentially. If you run it through Start Tunnel as your outbound gateway, all that traffic appears to be coming from that VPS. And here's the really cool part about that. Let's say your VPS provider says, oh, you're politically incorrect, we don't like you anymore, and cancels your account. Great. Start a new VPS anywhere else, point your domain to the new VPS, configure that, and you're back up and running. I did that.
I wanted to do this, I don't even have to go get a VPS. I've got a big giant box already. I'm sure I could configure my own VPS on my actual web server.
You absolutely could do this yourself.
I'm sure Tom could.
When I say you could do this, I really mean Tom could do this.
Yeah,
absolutely. And but the goal on this is not to put people in the position where they have to hire Tom to make it work.
Yeah.
The goal on this is so that the average listener to your show, you know, who's listening to us right now, not that it's trivial, but with a little bit of work, you know, can figure it out and could actually do it themselves. That's the goal. And Start Tunnel takes it from being crazy hard to really possible.
Yeah.
So that it's cool stuff right there. Yeah.
And because there are some things I'm thinking that would be really cool to do, and but they would be more small. Like they wouldn't really, I wouldn't want to take 200,000 people and push them through something like that, pounding a little box in my garage. But 80 people that are at a workshop or a small curated discussion group that maybe there's paid access to, being able to market that is completely secure. Like I have your information and maybe other people in the information that your group discussing with have your information, but you kind of knew that when you started having a group discussion, but nobody else does. Like,
so exactly.
We got our own little pool, right? Like maybe he's gross and you're in the pool with him, but it's only his grossness. It's not 10,000 other people's grossness.
So one of my projects right now I'm working on with yourpersonalbitcoinassistant.com is I'm working on providing people a Bitcoin risk assessment. So the goal on it is you've been stacking for a while. You got, you know, a significant stack perhaps, and you think you're good, but when was the last time you actually really tested it? When was the last time you had a I listened to Joel Ryle's interview recently, right? When was the last time there was an op4 whatever, right, that was pretending to attack your stuff? When did you go through all those scenarios? And even if you search on the internet for the checklist or whatever, how good is whatever is that going to be? So I put together a package to help people where I walk through with them. What are you doing? What's the risk? What are the areas? What are the mitigations? What's the priorities? What's not? Now, as part of this, I don't take custody. I don't want to know where you, I don't know where your keys are. I don't know what your secret is. I don't want to know anything. But even the stuff that I do need to know to help you with that is somewhat sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
So partially what I'm doing with this is I'm telling people right off the bat, I'm going, this information is not public. This does not go in Google Docs. We're not running this on Microsoft 365. This is going in CryptPad, which is a specific encrypted setup within my box that you have access to and I have access to, and that's it. So it's an extra layer of protection. And just for folks listening, the goal on this and the concern on this is not really that I think I'm such a big target that I'm likely to be hacked.
Yeah.
I'm not. The real concern on it is Google gets hacked. Dropbox gets hacked. Somebody like that gets hacked, and I just happen to have my stuff there. And my stuff and my customer stuff gets revealed because of that. And so a lot of it is reducing the attack surface by it's just me. How many people are really interested in targeting me? You know, maybe someday I'll become a huge celebrity or something, but not my goal, right? So that's a good, again, like you're saying, it's not designed to support thousands or hundreds of thousands of users, but specific, private, secure, contain just our mess, right? That's the goal on that stuff. Exactly.
We kind of talk about how Start Tunnel works and how these like independent groups are. There other things that people can do to protect their privacy with Start OS and maybe specific to kind of these new services and new version?
Yeah, absolutely. So we talked a little bit about Start Tunnel. We talked about a lot of that. One of the key things about this is getting to your Start OS service now, it's all encrypted. When you're going through these gateways now, like the Start Tunnel gateway, or if you connect it through a different gateway, it doesn't have to be Start Tunnel. You could do, if you're a little more technically savvy, you want to do your own VPN, do it through your own VPN. It's all good. It's a WireGuard connection directly down to that service level, so nobody in the VPN level even sees what's going on as well. It's all kind of contained back there. If you run is it Starlink, the satellite stuff, right? That uses a special type of router, which blocks a lot of this type of traffic. So for that, you have to do a Start Tunnel type of a piece. In addition to that, we talked about all of the VPNs. One of the things that's actually pretty cool with the new router is you can use that router to connect to a VPN. So a lot of people will have their router at home, again, hiding their home IP address. They'll connect to Mulvad, Proton VPN, whatever else it is out there, right? So that anybody, all the traffic coming in goes through that outside VPN before it gets to their house. So it's an extra layer, an extra step of relay there. The challenge with it then is that VPN provider sees all the inbound traffic from both sides.
Sure. Now,
they don't see the data, right? They don't see the actual encrypted data stream, but they know what website you were talking to.
Who and when.
Right. The metadata, who it was, when it was, how much it was. Was it, you know, 15 bytes or was it 30 terabytes? All of that stuff in order from the router, they got to know it. So one of the things that you can do is you can actually stack VPNs. So you could actually have multiple VPNs in a series where you go from your home router to Mulvad to Proton to wherever else. Now, Proton knows somebody at Mulvad is talking to some other site, but it's all they know. Mulvad knows you're talking to something at Proton, but that's all they know. So there's a famous internet meme. Maybe not that famous. If you're really geeky, I guess it's famous, about you can't find me. I'm behind 7 VPNs.
Okay.
Right? You don't need to string 7. But if you even do 2 or 3, geographically, politically dispersed, can give you some significant additional protection on that. Not a bad thing. The new Start WRT router has a specific user interface designed to say, put in all your stuff to make it easy to plug that in. So you're not going through 67 different panels and trying to make it work, but it doesn't work going, oh, which one broke and where? Yeah. So again, that user interface to make it easy to do that. That's really the goal there.
Yeah, I've always said, like, a lot of this stuff will work. It doesn't necessarily mean if you were specifically targeted by the NSA, you can't be found. Right.
Exactly.
The fantasy
exactly.
crap that's on, you know, some hacker chick and working for the
right.
FBI.
Right.
And be bouncing off 72 proxies and there's no way. Shut up. But you don't have to make, you don't have to make it easy. And I think that scum always run risk, reward, and work ratios through their minds.
Yes.
So, like, how much trouble am I going to go through to hack Jesse Markowitz?
Right.
Like, how much is really on the other end of that? If it's really easy, well, then let's find out. But if it's really hard, I might as well, like, you know, hack, like, you know, the credit rating agency and get 40 million records instead of, so, you know, what Jesse's song list really is.
Right. When the bear is chasing us, I don't have to outrun the bear. I just have to outrun you. Exactly. My house does not need to have the best locks in the world, whatever. They just got to be better than average. So somebody looking at it goes, yeah, it's not worth it, right?
Yeah.
That's what this type of stuff does. The other piece, though, which does help, is this. In a world where everything like emails and that sort of stuff are basically wide open, if you're a governmental agency, you put your sniffer on the big pipe and you suck it all in.
Yeah, yeah.
The more that encryption becomes standard and the more privacy practices that people take, the less easy grab there is. And so even for those agencies, it becomes a, if I care about Jesse, I'll get him.
Yeah.
But I can't draft this huge net and then just go, yeah, what do you think about all these people? It makes it harder on that. So,
yeah, you want to spend 6 months to brute force my encrypted image that was a cat hanging from a tree saying, hang in, baby. Go ahead and do that. How many times can you do that before it becomes, you know, intolerable economically and temporally?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So cool stuff there. One other note about the router side of things. There was a recent Trump thing where he came up with this new ruling where it said routers have to be manufactured in the U.S. or have special exception permission.
Oh, okay.
And basically almost none of the routers in the U.S. are actually manufactured in the U.S. So one of the challenges that Start9 is working with right now is it may not be possible to offer a Wi-Fi router in the U.S. without a special exception for that. In which case, the plan right now is to offer a 90% kit. You get a router and you have a Wi-Fi board that will
like an 80% upper on an AR, right? Like, yeah.
But would you manufacture the privacy of your own house is your choice. We're not selling that. We're just selling this and that. So
they could even be both pieces that you just.
Yeah. So there may need to be some.
It's two different things. It was in one box, but they each had their own box. Like, what it makes me think of back when I worked for Garrett.com and we did industrial Ethernet equipment, we were very proud of the fact that our products were made in America.
Right.
Well, that just meant that some guy in California stuck everything in a box.
Right.
And I mean not a cardboard box, the server housing or the hub or switches housing. But all the boards were spun overseas, every single one of them. And that's where the potential problems could be of, you know, we have somebody here talking about that right now, about how a lot of things are on the device itself.
Yes, exactly. One of the other things that I am working on packaging right now as well is something called Magic Wormhole. Magic Wormhole is kind of, it's a unique product, whatever else. It's open source package. And basically it's designed for if I want to send you a file, but you've got all sorts of security and routers and all sorts of craziness. I've got that on my side as well. It's a way of worming our way through all the crap and getting a direct connection directly from my machine to your machine to do that. That's really the goal on that one. And I'm looking at that going, that's really awesome. And it's super private and no one can see it. And I'm thinking about going, wait a second. If I want to magic wormhole a file to Jack, how does Jack's machine know to talk to my machine?
Yeah.
So it turns out there's a relay service, which is basically just a notifier where if you do magic wormhole by default, when you run the magic wormhole default, it says, talk to the default server and say, this is what I want to talk about and who I want to talk to, whatever else. You do the same and it connects us up. And then the actual file transfer is all between you and me.
Okay.
But there's a guy on the outside who knows about it, potentially.
Okay.
So one of the projects I'm working on right now actually is packaging for StartOS the magic wormhole relay.
Okay.
So what that would mean is if you and I want a magic wormhole something, I can tell you, go to Magic Wormhole and put in this particular website when it says what relay to use, use my relay.
Okay.
Since I'm sending it to you, you trust me, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And this way, even the relay part, we control the entire network from A to B.
Hmm. Because what it sounds like you're saying is that the other way is almost like you have like a message going through it. Remember, the tubes are full, right?
The tubes, yeah.
Right? And the tube is a direct connection between me and you. But somewhere in the middle, somebody has to fit the tube together.
Yes.
And you're trusting that when they fit that tube together, they didn't stick their own little tube in there like a listening device to hear or intercept what's going on.
Yeah, intercepting is pretty hard given the encryption. But,
they would intercept encryption without a key. So
they at least know that Jack and Jesse are talking, and they started talking at this time. There's extra metadata that they would know that they shouldn't need to know. We should be able to do this privately. Yeah.
Exactly. Jack and Jesse had a conversation at 9:30 a.m. on Wednesday, January 25th. And we don't know what it was about. But if, you get into some sort of being put under a looking glass, that can be leveraged against you.
Exactly. Now, this is the same issue that we have with Nostr.
Yeah.
If you look at Nostr, Nostr's really super cool. And it's all this encryption stuff, and it's all open source, and it's all, protocol, all that type of stuff, which is great. But the reality is, if Jack and Jesse want to talk over Nostr, we want to communicate at all, we have to share a relay. If we don't have a relay in common, I'm in my pond, you're in your pond, and it doesn't matter what I broadcast or what I'm looking for, our paths are never going to cross.
Correct.
We have to have a relay in common. Now, whoever runs that relay, guess what? They may not be able to read our encryption, but all the metadata they got access to. So if you're running Nostr and you care about this stuff, one of the things you should be thinking about very seriously is you're going to run your own relay. If you run your own relay, where do you want to run it? Why not on your StartOS box? Exactly. But there you go. See? So here's a Nostr RS relay. So that's one option to do a relay. There's a newer version called Haven available only for 040. And in that version, your relay actually has, I'm trying to remember, I think it's four pieces. I can only think of three offhand, but it's got a bunch of pieces. One of the pieces is all of your stuff that's your communications, you archive locally, so you keep that. It also gives you stuff where if there are other relays you want to follow, it'll pull that stuff from the other relays and bring it into your relay. Mm. And if you want to broadcast, you can have it locally, and you can say these messages, these types, this whatever, to get pushed out to these other relays as well. So you can have one package on your StartOS box that allows you to really manage all of your Nostr communications.
That's really cool. And it does up the privacy issue a great deal because, Nostr's encrypted and all. But like you said, you're relying on like this giant list of relays. And what most people do is they hook up to a bunch of them. Because that way, even if you're not on my relay, we don't have a direct relay in common. Your relay talks to this relay talks to that relay, and I'm
connected. There's some overlap.
So maybe it's 20 seconds or so before whatever you posted shows up, but eventually it's going to show up in my feed. Or if I DM you eventually.
The downside on that is all of those relays are aware of what am I reading and what am I writing to those relays.
Yeah.
You're leaking.
And all the relays, one way or another, are connected to all the relays, unless you're purposely not connecting your relay to other relays, because everybody wants to see everything, so everybody's broadcasting everything.
Let me give you another great example. GitHub. GitHub used to be open source project, whatever else, got bought by Microsoft, right? So a lot of people use that for their code. GitHub is still free to the public, free to use, but they've got terms of use. One of those terms of use is if you've got that free account, you can't have private repositories. Now, for 99% of the stuff I'm doing, I want it public. I want more eyes on it. The more people seeing what I'm doing, the better. So I don't have that as an issue at all. But my wife is an economist. She's doing some economics research. And so she wants to be able to put her stuff out on Git and share it with some of her folks and use Git to manage some of the research that she's doing. So she cannot put that out public, available to everybody. So she signed up for an academic account. And the way that it works was you have to scan in your stuff, know your customer, whatever else. Here's your ID. Here's the, I'm a professor on letterhead, all the rest of it. Put that all into their system. Their AI looks at it and decides if you're good enough or not to get this free academic account. She tried it, I think, 4 or 5 or 6 times, failed every time. The AI bounced her. And she got pissed off and she ranted at me about it. It's like, why can't this work? I'm like, it's AI. You got to call up customer support. She goes, I can't call customer support. I'm like, pay for the account. She's like, I'm not paying for the account. I'm supposed to get this for free, right? But even if it's a private thing, if you really want it private, you want it not so it's just not discoverable. You don't even want it so Microsoft servers have it or whatever else. So one of the things you can do with StartOS is you can have your own Git running on your own StartOS server. So you could have git.jaxlaws.com. And then anybody who wants to work with you to collaborate can push and pull repos and all the normal Git commands that they want to do programming wise, or a lot of people are doing it for data, not just programming anymore, as a way of managing that stuff, source control, version control, all that. Again, another great opportunity to do that stuff self-hosted.
That's really, really cool. And I think like one of the things I always have to remember is a lot of things that I can set up and do, the average person. The average person is not sitting with a dedicated 4 terabyte beefed up, whatever Tom told me to buy on our latest upgrade server, that's sitting in a data center somewhere that we have remote access to. Like most people don't have that. And so that's why when I first heard from Matt Hill, I'm like, yeah, I got a server. Right. It didn't click for me for a minute that, yeah, but you know, not everyone does. And if I didn't run a business and a podcast and whatever, I wouldn't have a server either. But kind of want to say to people here about some of these cloud services and shit they're using and why I have a server in the first place. When I started, people like, as the show started to grow and like HostGator basically kicked me out because I was crushing their unlimited. Yeah. Their unlimited became unlimited really fast. Why don't you just use, you know, one of these free podcast hosting services? And today, maybe there's a little more stability. But, you know, I'm talking about like 2009, and I'm going, so that'll be great when, since they don't charge anything, they go bankrupt. Right? And then my entire catalog of work is just not there the next day or what have you. So, like, I wanted to pay for something because I wanted reliability and I wanted control. What Jesse's talking about with a Start9 box is much less, trust me, it's much less expensive than renting a day. Now, it's not my monthly price isn't the cost of one box, but it's close, and I got to pay it every month, right, year after year. So what you're proposing people use to solve that issue is much less expensive and sits in their home, and they have complete control over it, where I have a Tom and a remote connection, right? And I have both of those things, right? Because they have different purposes, but they do solve a common problem that you can't pull the plug on me. You can't cut me off from my own data. You can't cut me off from my own communications. You can't cut me off from the services I'm using, and you can't cut me off from the services that I'm providing. And even my server, theoretically, I could be cut off. Now, there's not a lot of the, you know, that I could hide anyway because it's all public, right? Like I get emails all the time. I need to update my credit card. Yeah, we'll do that with Stripe or PayPal because I literally don't ever, like, you charge my credit card. That's actually not possible. The processor charged your credit card because you signed up on auto renew. I cannot see your credit card, your information. I store no private data, but there are things that I would prefer people not know. And it's nice to have a different option for those things.
Yeah, absolutely.
So pawn shop secondhands are great for a home lab. I think we missed something there. who is this person? Yeah. You know who this person is? I don't reckon. They seem to know a lot of shit.
This one. There you go.
I don't recognize this handle at all, but they seem very switched on technically here.
So I'm working on your StreamYard, so I don't see any of the comments or whatever else. If there's other stuff, I'm happy to answer and comment on it, but I don't see
anything. This guy right here, he's had a bunch. I'm surprised you don't see the chat over there on the side. Can we talk about, like, anything else with AI? We kind of talked about the limits.
We jumped ahead. I had that as, like, later in the conversation to talk about AI. So, yeah, so we talked at the beginning about running local AI. And that's awesome. It's great in theory.
Okay.
But like we talked about at the very beginning, it's hard. I mean, you cannot compete head toe to toe, you know, running at home versus, you know, Claude, ChatGPT, the size and scope, the amount of horsepower those guys have. But for special cases and specially tuned applications, and if you're patient, you can run in a batch mode, you can potentially do some stuff locally. So I think there's an area for that, and I think that area is growing. A lot of the models now are being tuned specifically to be better for smaller hardware. So as you said earlier, you know, this is the worst AI that you'll ever use. That's true for local AI as well.
Okay.
It's getting better. If you want to be truly private, you need to run local AI. That's it. People who were concerned before about, you know, I'm on the internet and all that stuff, and then the big thing became search history, right? If you search Google and that search history is basically public, discoverable, whatever else, that could potentially be damaging.
Mm.
And it's from both sides, you know, from a privacy perspective, you don't want it out there, but also from a provider of information perspective, people being nervous about that data being captured means they're less likely to look at any controversial topic, whether it be sexual, political, firearms, you know, any whatever your sensitive topic of the week is, right? You're going to get fewer people looking for your stuff on the search engines if people are concerned about who might know that they're looking for that. Now, don't think about what you search for. Think about your conversations that you have with AI. Now, I did your AI course. There's a lot of stuff in that AI course that, depending upon what you're doing and what you're working with, could be potentially sensitive, let's say.
Yeah.
So in my case, I do two things. One is I did the paid version, the business version of ChatGPT, so I've got a little bit better of a user agreement with them.
Yeah.
And I self-censor significantly. When I'm coding a package for StartOS, I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm pulling from an open source repo. It's open source documentation. It's going to be open source. I just don't care. And I want the power. When I'm doing other stuff, I'm much more sensitive on that. I used quick shameless plug for your upcoming stuff. I don't know where it is, but the architect. I used the architect to build some GPTs. And one of those GPTs that I built was personal health. And so it's got like a personal health coach GPT for that stuff. And as I'm working with it, I'm aware and sensitive to what am I plugging into that. So mostly right now it's what am I eating? What's my weight? What are my exercises? And really, I don't really need that to be public.
Yeah.
But if it came out, it's not the worst of things.
And we can look at you and see kind of about what you weigh and how tall you are. And I can probably figure you don't mind eating a nacho chip once in a while.
Exactly. although starting this thing in the last 3 weeks, I have not had a nacho chip. I've actually gotten very serious on my.
You just look kind of like a Cheetos kind of guy, you know.
I do. It's right. Absolutely. It would certainly be something I would enjoy. So, but again, that's the point. When you're dealing with public AI,
yeah,
it becomes a concern, yeah. Right? And the concern about it is not necessarily, oh, I don't trust this guy. It's once the data is outside of my house, it's outside of my house and I'm never getting it back.
Yeah.
Think about the people. What was the gene company? 23andOne or 23andMe?
23andMe.
Right. And then they went bankrupt, right?
Yeah.
And somebody else bought them?
Bought the genetic database. Tens of millions of people's genetic code.
Even if you totally trusted and believed in the original mission with the original guy, and you're like, he would never do anything bad. I trust them, right?
Yeah.
Stuff happens once it gets outside your house. So when you think about running your own server, the three key things about it, one is with StartOS, it's nowhere nearly as hard as you think it is. It may not be totally trivial, but it's not as hard as you think it is.
Yeah.
The second thing is it can do more than you probably think it can.
Yeah.
And the third part is once you start thinking about all the stuff that's leaving your house that maybe shouldn't leave your house, you start thinking about maybe I should really do this thing.
Yeah. I mean, look at it from a corporate standpoint with the AI thing, like a high-end corporate company, like a Fortune 1000 company.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you right now, like a data center at a drug company,
mm-hmm.
right? The security around that makes – I've been to a data center at a drug company. I've been to a data center at the FBI. The drug company, honest to God, had tighter security, right?
Yeah.
But that's not even the real risk with AI because obviously your freaking chemist that's developing this new thing is not going to be using Claude or Gemini with a consumer-level account. But
right.
If you are even coming to the concept of we're developing a strategic marketing plan, right? And I'm company A. I'm Spacelease Rockets, right?
Yeah.
And then this is old people will know this, right?
It's
and
an old one. Yep.
Cogs wants to know what Spacelease Rockets is doing.
Yeah.
And maybe they don't even see what Spacelease Rockets is doing. But if we're developing our strategic marketing initiatives in conversations with LLMs, and that LLM is using that for its training, when the engineers at Cogswell use that same LLM and start developing their marketing concepts, the thing that my people developed at Spacelease Rockets with that AI now become by default accessible. Even if they don't know they're getting the information from me, my innovations are now becoming part of if we don't have something walling it off. And I see like on a corporate level eventually, and they're building these now. I don't know what the technical term is. I call them a fish trap.
Right.
So if you think about the way a fish trap runs, there's a cone and you put bait in there and the fish swims straight in. But the fish can't get back out. So
easy to get in, but hard to get out.
Models have to be able to access all this information from private things they have access to because they paid for it and public information and pull it in. But they don't want what's done with it going out. And on some smaller scale, like I think we need that for ourselves. I do think one day there'll be a box about this big, right, that will basically do everything that Start9 does now. Plus, it'll run AI for you on some sort of local level. Maybe it'll share compute, but that compute will be fully encrypted or something. I don't know. Right.
So two things on that.
Maybe it'll be 10 of these. I don't know. But I think we will get to a point where the average person, if they want to, will have a localized AI that they completely control.
So two things on that. The first one, your comment about the leakage.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily just the finished documents going back out through the fish trap.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
No, that's a concern. That's exfiltration of my data. There's another concern, which is if Spacelease Sprockets finds out that I'm interested in all these variations of titanium.
Yes, yes.
My very queries out impact information that could be leaking, that could be a problem as well.
Yep.
That in itself is a potential issue. I actually just finished 2 days ago a second pass on your AI course.
Okay.
And what I found now, because this is course four that you're finishing up now, if I recall correctly,
correct,
is I'm going through some of the prompts. I put the prompt in, and then further down on your instruction page, there's a, here's the follow-up prompt. And I'm finding ChatGPT is jumping ahead and doing the follow-up prompt for me already.
Because 400 people did it already.
I'm betting you got 400 people who did a copy and a paste of this exact initial prompt, and then the next one is this.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
That's the part where I'm not uploading my finished documents to ChatGPT, but the queries that I'm putting, it's getting in there.
Yeah, yeah, and it's learning, because it's a self-learning tool, that when a person asks this, then they're probably trying to do that. And that this is a good way to do that. And therefore, what I'm saying is, again, Cogswell, they're trying to solve this problem that we're trying to solve. But now our innovations, not necessarily the final result, but the methodology is being revealed. A way to understand it a lot more simplistically is, and today you want to do combinations and things because of the cost of UTXOs and Bitcoin, but like back in the day when transactions were super cheap, the standard advice was every transaction new address. And part of the reasoning behind that was, let's say you're running a single address you receive all your payments to, and I'm your competitor, and I know you take Bitcoin, and I find out what your address is. And so I go pull up all that information, and I see like 90% of your entries are $69.98 in U.S. dollar value. Okay. Well, then I look at your catalog. I just determined the item that you sell the most of. Now I have competitive knowledge of your business operations. That's just one type of thing. Like, it doesn't mean I can steal your money. It doesn't mean I know who your customers are. But it does mean that I've determined, like, your top five selling items. And specifically to the Bitcoin market. So now I can emulate that in my marketing. So now you've lost some of your competitive edge. And I think in AI, that's a real concern. Yeah. And what you said, like, and by the way, like, this is also strategic in some of the work I'm doing with these books, because AI placement is a new marketing strategy. So the more you can get people to ask about you in AI, the more AI knows you, and the more AI spreads you to other people. Like, there's a whole mess inside of this right now. And it does make me think of 1996 and the internet as a whole. Like, there's so much we just don't know yet about this hole that we're digging for ourselves to live in.
It is that search engine optimization turned to AI.
AI optimization.
Yeah.
They call it AI placement. That's
placement.
The term? AI discovery. That's the technical AI term we're using for it.
Okay.
The marketing term is
now,
AI
discovery.
The second
discovery. Part that you put, that you commented about was your book size, whatever, right?
Yeah.
Having a local device. I think we are close on that.
Really?
And what I mean by that is exactly where I started. It's not going to replace Claude for doing, take this monstrous repository, whatever, and crunch all the code and do all that.
Yeah.
But Jesse wants to stick to a diet, okay? Local AI is fine for that.
You only need so much data for that, right?
You don't need that much data. And the context required is minimal.
Yeah.
It could run locally.
Yeah.
Right? So there's definitely some areas where you can segregate. The more sensitive stuff happens locally on your piece, and anything else you do differently. I mentioned before.
How much, you know, here, like, I've got this is 4 gig. Holy shit. All right. So I got this little 4 gig data stick right here, right?
Yeah.
How many just raw conversations between Jesse and his AI about his health plan for context for my local AI, can I store on this data stick? And the answer is more than you will have in your freaking lifetime.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
Even if you were much younger than you are, and storage is getting really cheap. So I also see that like that would be a whole new level of air gapping too. So I've got my AI unit, and I've got my contextual data for this particular purpose.
Yes.
And now that contextual data is available, and now it's not. That could be a way forward with that. Because, yeah. like, you know, you kind of mentioned the architect. I would like to be able to give people a box that is the architect. But it's preloaded with all of the entities the architect is made to make. So it's not designed to make them. They're already there. And then your interaction builds your context and your direction, but you are not sharing any of that data. That data is internal only. That would be really cool. And, you know, maybe there's some things in there that you would need that external compute for, like your board of directors or whatever. But things like you're talking about, that could be very localized.
Yes, yes. So where you're going and where you're directionally going in terms of your book series, whatever else,
yeah,
is where I want you to finish because I want it.
Yeah.
But there's a science fiction book, Neal Stephenson.
Okay.
The Diamond Age. It's subtitled, or A Young Lady's Illustrated Primer. And the key science fiction device in the story is a young urchin, whatever, not from the upper class, gets a book that was designed to be, how do you grow up to be a wonderful young lady?
Okay.
So it's the AI teaching you all the life lessons, learning from you as like your personal AI companion, angel, taskmaster, coach,
yeah.
everything on your shoulder yeah. in a book. So the young lady's illustrated primer. Anyway, okay. but that's directionally when you talk about Jack's laws and having
yeah,
AI
that's
and GPTs,
exactly that
that's the direction where you're going. And to be able to run something like that on a StarOS server in your house, access it through encrypted channels from your phone is not that far off.
That's
now,
really
the power
cool.
of the book, the ability for it to be a general AI to do everything, that's going to take a while.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But the ability to be a limited focused health coach?
Yeah.
Entirely private, entirely encrypted, entirely on my side? That's there. Oh,
yeah,
I totally
we're an
forgot.
Accountability here. Partner.
I
right?
totally forgot. Here's another one for you, Jack. You ready for this one?
Yeah.
How many of us run Waze? Apple Maps, Google Maps,
yeah.
GPS drivers, right?
Yeah, I run Waze, yeah.
How many of us run Life 360 to keep track of kids and family members, whatever else, to track
oh,
everybody's locations? Life 360 is a family-focused tracking application.
Okay, that must be what my son and his kids run. Okay, yeah.
I would be shocked if they did not. It is incredibly popular, whatever else. The advantage of it is when the kid's at the game and they're running late or whatever else, and you're trying to figure out, is my wife there or she's stuck in traffic, whatever else, you pull up the app, you see where everybody's at, and it's
yeah.
great. Okay?
Yeah.
The problem is, where is all that data? It's on a centralized server.
Sure, sure.
Owned and controlled by somebody else that you can be bounced out of, that's discoverable, all that type of stuff, right? Well, guess what? There's a open source package called OwnTrax that runs a server that you can have an app on your phone that talks to that server, and you can run that server on your StarOS box now.
That would be awesome. So that would mean
yeah.
my wife and I can track each other, but only yeah. we can track each other.
Yeah.
I love that.
And anybody that you invite. And it's not that if you do, you can do that with Life 360.
Yeah.
The problem is because you just don't invite anyone else to your family, so no one else can track you.
Yeah, but somebody
this is admin, they can
yeah.
track you on
yeah.
a certain exactly.
Law
exactly.
enforcement goes, give us the data. Most of these companies, as
go.
Long as there's a sheet of paper that says some guy in a black robe said to give the data, they just give the data.
And sometimes not even that.
Sometimes not even that, yeah. Because
right.
I know that must be what my kid's running because
yeah.
we were in Colorado and I took my mm-hmm. grandson and then my wife, my daughter-in-law, and my granddaughter and my son went in a different vehicle.
Yeah.
And
right.
we left like 10 minutes after they did, but
yes.
we were unimpeded by females. So somehow we got to the restaurant we were meeting at first. I
yeah.
still don't know how exactly that occurred. It probably involved
yeah.
one more trip to a gift shop or something. And
yeah.
we're sitting there waiting on them, and Braylon pulls his phone up, and he goes, yeah, they're on the road now. They're 2 miles away, and they're doing 4 miles an hour.
There you go.
And
exactly.
he must be running what you're talking about then. And my wife and I were like, we should run something like that for each other. But the there's a lot of this stuff that I don't like, but I've made myself comfortable with it. There's certain things that still, like, the just the hackles on the
neck. It's just
neck.
Too much. It's a step too far still.
Yeah, because no, I know the government can track my phone right now.
Yes.
And if they're doing it, they're probably very bored because my phone, I am unique. I'm a unicorn with phones. There's oftentimes, like, my phone is over there, and I'm way, way far away, several miles, and it's not with me, and my phone just sits there and goes nowhere. But there's times where, you know, that's not the case. And
yes,
having a dedicated app to track that goes to a centralized database, that bugs me.
Yeah.
That bugs me a lot.
Absolutely. I will give you another one. My wife and I decided a couple years back that we wanted to do security cameras in the house.
Okay.
And I said, hey, that's really cool. I want to do this open source. So I went out, I got this open source camera. I found this open source service. I found somebody else. This is still in the StartOS 035 days. It's a lot harder to package. So I convinced somebody else to package the service that would let us manage these cameras, whatever else. And I spent not like a month, 40 hours a week, but a month elapsed time, probably 40 plus hours over that time trying to make this stuff work. And at the end of it, I sort of had one camera working, kind of. And I thought about it and went, my wife is not going to put up with this. And what did we do? We went out and bought like the set of Ring cameras that are horrible because they all broadcast up to their systems and all that stuff. All of that. Now, we turn off the AI features, so it's not sitting the pictures there to figure out, is it a dog, is it a person, is it a family member? But just because I turn off that AI feature, I think, from the app, what do they really do with that data? I have no idea what they really do. Not much I can do on that.
Yeah.
With StartOS 040, one of the things, Start9 is in development right now. It's in prototype phase. Some of the staff members already have them in their house, is a internet camera that runs to a StartOS service, all contained.
I like that.
Yeah. And again, remember we talked before about local AI? You can't boil the ocean, but if you want to take a picture and go dog or person, and you've got an AI model tuned just for that, and you got a little horsepower, you can actually do that. Yeah. So there's some cool
stuff. That would be useful added to the camera because it would be like non-human entity or human entity, right? Like
well, because I want to get alerted.
Something moving around out in the back pasture, and I know my wife and I are here. If I know it's a human, I know it doesn't belong there. If I know it's not a human,
exactly.
It's a deer, it's a duck, it's a dog, it's a cat.
Whatever it might be. Yes.
Tree branch doing this, right? Like
exactly.
That's really because like the other thing I've thought about doing, and again, I hold myself back on things because I don't like broadcasting my life to Ring or Amazon or whoever.
Yes.
I've thought about setting up some more cameras around here and having them on about, and I thought like it could actually be fun for the podcast because like I could literally set one up in my office that's not pointed at me, that's pointed over at my mushroom tent, and occasionally we could have mushroom cam, right? Because all I have to do is I have another device over here. I can just basically log that into StreamYard on a different email so that they don't and cross the streams and blow up. And if it's localized only, if I pull that up on the screen, I can still screen share that when I want to. And
there
that would be, or like have a duck cam or something like that, just for fun. And I've held back on a lot of that stuff because, no, I don't want some centralized service, all my shit trunked into their crap. I don't want that.
Exactly. Right?
Yeah.
So one of the things that a lot of people are doing now is they're doing stuff with Home Assistant. So instead of using Alexa or whatever else, Home Assistant is an open source package that allows you to run all sorts of home automation stuff, right? Guess what? You could run Home Assistant instead of on a dedicated other box. You could run that on your StartOS server as well. Integrate that all together. A couple clicks, you got it installed. Now you still need to configure it. It's non-trivial to configure Home Assistant. But it's possible. It's there, all of that. Now, I think I saw a note in the chat. I managed to pull that up. Somebody asked about, hey, you guys are talking about all these really cool services, and I don't see them. So here's the thing.
Is this
if
the
you
one?
Are running, yeah, that's the one.
All right, go
if
ahead.
You are running 0.35 version of Start OS, you're only going to see packages that were written for Start OS 0.35. All the really cool stuff, all the new stuff that's coming out, it's not for 0.35. It's all for 0.4. So if you don't see it, you probably have to upgrade first. Sorry, it's just how it is. The other piece is, right? So give me a little bit of rope to run with this one. It's a little tougher. One of the concerns that StartOS has had from the very beginning is they did not want to be the central single point of failure. One of the key things that Start9 always wanted was if Start9 the company died or got shut down, people should be able to continue. So it's an open source project. If all the people in Start9 got hit by a bus, somebody else could take the repo, fork it, and create StartOS V2 and publish that, and you could keep going. One of those centralization points has been packaging. Initially, all the packages were done by Start9 staff and Start9 contractors.
Okay.
So the concern was, we don't want to have an app store like Apple, a Play Store like Google, where the only way you can do things is if you play in our walled garden. So what they did instead was they said, if anyone can create these packages, the S9 PKs, and right in the user interface, there's a spot that says sideload. So yeah. If you have an S9 PK, you can sideload, you can do it. In addition to that, guess what one of the new services is? One of the new services is actually a registry. So if you wanted to curate, because there's going to be a boatload of packages out there. If you
yeah.
want to curate, these are the packages that really apply to survival podcast people. You could have registry.survivalpodcast.com, registry.jackslaws.com. And then the only packages that show up there are the ones that you approve, that you like, that you want to promote. And if I want to promote it to your community, right, because I'm a big survival podcast guy, let's do that. I got to get your permission to get posted on your registry. So
I'll give you permission. We'll set that shit up. I made a joke that Tom's like, no more shit this month, Jack, but that could be a thing. And I don't want to run it. I'll just give you the space to do it. And I love that because I don't worry about a lightning bolt killing all the Matt Hill and all those people. I do have a sneaking suspicion, as cool as some of this shit is, that someday a bunch of dudes in black suits might go in there and say, we're shutting you down.
Yeah.
And it'd be really neat when they go, well, that's nice. Good luck.
One of the advantages of doing it the way that they have is if you shut down Start9, you shut down one group of people promoting it.
Yeah.
But anybody else who's running it already keeps going. And if they want to continue promoting it, they continue promoting it. Makes it much, much harder to shut down.
It's so, like WikiLeaks of distribution for apps, right?
Yeah.
It's like wiki apps.
Oh, there's another one. I don't remember the name of it, but it's the archival website open source package. So sometimes you go to a website and you're like, oh, this is really cool. All this wiki type information.
Yeah.
I want to capture that. And maybe I want to share that with my community.
Yeah.
Well, there's a package that you can do. You can do that as well. So initially,
like you're talking about like Internet Archive. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. Stuff like that. And I don't remember what.
Wayback Machine is one of the.
Wayback Machine. Yeah. But you could self-host that. Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be really cool. Because I don't want to host it for everything.
Exactly.
But I may want to host it for
things that you care about.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So initially, there was just the registry, the marketplace with the apps, with the services that Start9 did. That's going to continue to be there all the time. Those packages in that registry will be the ones that are officially supported by Start9, so that like the Start9 business model right now is if you want to do it yourself, you can. download the stuff for free, boot it up, whatever it is. If you buy their hardware, you get the $300 support package for free. And then if you have any questions, you go onto their setup and you ask them the questions and everything else, and you just, great support. And that support is not just for StartOS, it's for all of the StartOS packages that are on that primary registry. So if you're running Bitcoin, if you're running NTFY, Garage, any of these ones that are on that primary registry, and you've got questions, you've got access to support for that whole setup. That's pretty cool. In addition to that, they set up a community registry, which for things that they deliberately did not want to promote. They said, I don't want to be responsible for this. There's a, in the Freedom community, there's a lot of folks who are very vocal and supportive of Monero. And Start9 has a philosophical bent that says, we do Bitcoin, we're not going to mess with Monero. But they wanted to be open. They don't, we won't allow Monero on our platform. No, it's your machine. You do whatever you want with it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, so we're not doing it, but you can.
We're not going to support Monero, but if you want to build it, we want people to know it exists. So you can do that, right? So there's a Monero package that you can do. If you want to run a Monero node on StartOS, you can do that too. And if you wanted to run Bitcoin Cash or whatever, I don't know, whatever else if you wanted to do, if someone's willing to package it, you could get it out there and you could do it. So right now there's the Start9 primary registry and there's the community registry. That's the stuff that is hosted and managed by Start9 right today. So if you're looking for a package and you can't find it and you're on 4 and you still can't find it, it may not be on the primary registry. You have to just go switch registry, go to the community registry, and then you would see it there. In addition to that, not all of the packages are ready for prime time. So some of the stuff that I've been working on, I've tested it, but I'm still looking for some more alpha testers as well to test some of this package out before I say it's really ready for like general release.
Yeah, gotcha.
So Start9 hosts an alpha registry and a beta registry on top of all this stuff as well. Now, that stuff will eventually migrate into the community registry, but it's not quite there yet. It's got to get a little more testing, a little more use through all of that. So if you're looking for some of the stuff that I'm mentioning, just reach out to me, hit me on Telegram or shoot me an email. I can track down like which registry it's in or whatever else it might be. Happy to talk about that stuff with folks, when it will be available or anything like that. But here's the part that's really cool. It's not fully fleshed out yet. But the goal going forward is to make the registry even less central in the whole scheme of things, but to go to more of like a Nostr type of a model where packages get signed by developers and you, Jack, decide which developers you trust. You put their signatures into your file. And then when you look out on the internet or at different registries, you would see, hey, this one was signed by Jesse. And you go, I like Jesse. I trust Jesse.
Oh, I trust Jesse.
Like his stuff, right? But it's signed by somebody you've never heard of before. What is that handle?
And that would be like some sort of complex key like Bitcoin or Nostr has so that I can't just put Jesse T. Baby, it's me.
Exactly.
And it's not.
Exactly.
I'm retard doing some half-ass code that's designed to screw your box up.
And then the other part about it is they're looking at ways that if I know somebody who wrote a package that I know personally and I like and trust, I'm running that package and all the rest of that stuff, that I could sign their package in addition to their signature. So even though you don't know them, you know me, and we get some of that web of trust going on that. So that's an in-development thing. But the idea on it is very much that there's going to be a lot more packages. Folks are going to need to be aware of what they're doing with different packages and choosing what they download and all the rest of that stuff. But there's going to be a lot of capability there coming up really soon.
Did you want to show any of the things you're particularly doing? Just keep in mind, again, like I said, we have a lot more audio people than we do video. But if you want to throw some stuff up on the screen, now would be a time to – what is Jesse doing? What is Jesse doing with StartOS?
Yeah, let me see what I can no, you know what? Let me talk through it instead because I don't think it's going to show as well as I might otherwise think. So some of the things that I'm doing specifically on the StartOS side is I am packaging a bunch of services. So I already mentioned Bakunjo, which is the to-do list. Garage, it gives you basically like S3 storage. So if you don't want to use Amazon storage for regular storage, do you want to self-host that? You can do that. Notify, already mentioned. N8N I mentioned. This is basically like the workflow where you can build a whole workflow for stuff. And then each of those different nodes on the workflow could do whatever actions you want it to do. Magic Wormhole, what else? So I'm packaging left and right. And really, it's not that I really want to be a packager. It's not that that's like the my goal in life or it's particularly profitable as much as it's just a, this is the stuff that I want to do with my machine. And I'm just really looking at this with what else can I use this for? What are the things I want to do in my daily life and how can I make more and more of that happen? So I've been doing a bunch of that. I'm doing a lot of speaking at meetups and conferences and things like that about StartOS, telling people about it, helping them get started with it, and things along those lines as well. And I'm doing a little bit of consulting on that as well. Sometimes people call me, ask me questions, and like, what is StartOS? How do I use it? All the rest of that. I just saw a question about Proxmox. Yeah, it's not virtualization. It's a single OS. It's a single piece that runs on top of Linux. It's a user interface on top of Linux. And the idea on it basically is it makes that installation and management of different packages really, really easy for the regular guy. If you can install an app on an iPhone, you can install a service on StartOS. That's the idea. Plug and play. So very different from that perspective. And then in addition to that, I've also recently co-founded a new organization, the Bitcoin Pivot, which is specifically, we started the conversation with like, who is Jesse? What are you about? Part of my mission in life is bringing freedom to the world. I want people to have the option to run their life the way they want to. And a big part of that right now is being able to manage your wealth, store your value, transact your value the way you want. And today, that's basically Bitcoin. That is the way to do it. You know, 50 years ago, it was gold and silver. If you wanted to be able to transact privately, self-custody, that was the way you did it. Today, it's Bitcoin. And so Bitcoin's for everyone. Our goal is very much to get it out there. So we've got the website, thebitcoinpivot.com. It's got an easy onboarding approach where folks can come in. They can check it out. There's a whole learning section if you want to learn about Bitcoin, you can do all of that. And the attitude on it is this is really designed to be a place for people to come together. We talk a lot about the three C's of Bitcoin: culture, creativity, and connection. So a lot of the Bitcoin conversations are all about I'm anti-spam, I'm pro this, oh, whatever else. And a lot of that culture gets kind of tied into the fighting about it. And we're really trying to develop a culture of inclusivity, a culture of creativity. How are we using Bitcoin to make the world a better place and connecting people together? So really a home for the broader Bitcoin community, not just the technical folks. So working on that. And then the thing I mentioned before, doing Bitcoin risk assessments. So I'm currently in a pilot mode for that. So I've got some limited slots for early entrance. I'm offering a big discount on that for folks getting started. If you're interested, reach out to me. Jack, how do we do a discount code for the Bitcoin Pivot? Can I just email you and Tom and get something added into that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Just send me an email offline, TSPC in the subject so we don't miss it. And
right after the show,
you already have a listing, so we'll just append it to your existing listing.
Perfect. Perfect. And if I can, I'll email it to you right after the show. If you can add it into the show notes for this particular show, that would be great.
Okay. I will absolutely do that. Yeah.
I think that's a pretty good coverage. Any other questions that we missed? Anything else?
We only had a couple, and I think we hit one. One was a comment from Jesse C.
Ooh, okay.
We've got paged out to a wreck from Life360 because they left their phone on the roof. It slid off going down the road. Took a while to figure that one out.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's just more of a comment. And then we had a question. Oh, and that was the one we were just talking on, and I threw a cut and paste in that made me sound really smart. But he was basically asking the difference between StartOS and a visualization platform like Promox. And they're just – that's like saying – how does an apple compare to a crocodile's eyeball?
And they're both round. Great, but just different.
They're just, they're both round, but they do different things. Like, one's an apple and one's a crocodile's eye, and they don't
other than they have a similar shape. It's not even apple and orange, right? They're totally
it's
different.
Really, yeah, it's really different. It's more like apple and tennis ball or something like that.
Yeah, I was trying to think of the most ridiculous link I could, and crocodile eye came to me. I don't know why.
Just a quick aside, is it Lewis Electric, whatever, for this? If you are a Proxmox person, and you're, it's the first time you've heard of StartOS, download it and install it in one of your virtual machines under Proxmox and play with it.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely. One other thing I should really mention, because we talked a lot about 0.35 and, you know, 0.4 and whatever else. Timeline. Right now, 0.4, even though it's beta, is incredibly, incredibly solid. All of the new machines, if you order a Start 9 box today, is going to ship with 0.4 beta, whatever, out the door. Okay. Everybody already who is interested type of stuff, it's available to do the upgrade today. The things that there's, and there's detailed instructions about how you do that. So if you are interested at all in 0.4, what I would say is read the instructions, read them again, and then have them open as you go through the steps. It's a little tricky. It's not hard. It's not difficult, but it's one of those things where if you ready, fire, aim, right, you can shoot yourself in the foot. But basically, it's pretty straightforward. Today, you have to do a flash to a USB as one of the steps to get the new version of the operating system on the machine. Probably sometime in the next, I don't know, somewhere between 2 weeks and 2 months, whatever it is, it'll get finalized and there will be an over-the-air update where you just click upgrade and it will let you upgrade. But even then, you need to be careful when you do that to follow the steps in the upgrade guide so that you don't mess anything up.
Yeah.
There are a couple packages that were old that were never really supported well under 0.35 that do not have an equivalent on 0.4. So those are going away.
Okay.
I can't think of one offhand, but it's just, you know, there's one or two like
that. If it was important, somebody would repackage it.
Exactly. and they just didn't. Right.
There'll be that one person, though, that you – like, so in, you mentioned our AI course. So in our AI course,
yeah,
there was some points where people would be like, is this a prompt or not? I thought it was really obvious. Tom finally like dumps all the documents in the Claude and says, put a blue, you know, background behind all the prompts. So I start putting those out and instantly somebody's like, but I don't have the Word doc one anymore. I can't type things onto it for notes. It's like, you do know you could – here's the Word doc. I'll keep – and round five, there will be – it'll be just PDFs. There'll be no Word documents. Like, you can cut and paste your ass off if you want to. But there's always the one person – like, the day I stopped streaming to whatever the hell it's called, the Microsoft platform, that all the gamers are on. It's
it's not Discord, Twitch?
No, Twitch, right? The day I stopped streaming to Twitch – one person, Hunter, who watches on Twitch is going to be like, why aren't you, like, as long as I don't have to do anything, I'll keep streaming there.
If StreamYard supports it, you just click the button.
If that's it, I'll do it. Otherwise, like, I'm not doing the extra step. Like, if they ever, you have to reattach it, I'm sure it's in Bitwarden or something, but I don't even know how to log in anymore.
So
if it ever falls off, it's probably going to go away. It's not important because Hunter and two other people listen there. Like, you could go to Rumble, man, if you hate YouTube, or go to X or wherever else we are. But hey, bro, this has been great.
Awesome.
I really appreciate you taking the time to come explain this. If there's anybody out there that feels like this stuff's over your head, it probably isn't. You just need to look at what's available and think about, like, what do I want to be able to do that I want control of? And just do one thing, install one app from the marketplace, configure it, learn how to use it, make it work, and then pick one more thing. Because, if you try to do all the things and you've never done stuff like this before, you're not a technical person, it'll overwhelm you. But think about your phone, right? If you look at your phone right now and you start going screen to screen, you probably have 5, 6, 7 screens of apps. And there's probably like half of them that you installed at some point you don't really use anymore. But the other half of them, you use them all the time. And you have no trouble using them. And one of the things I like to do to people to make them understand that it's really not hard, you just think it is, what phone do you have? Let's say they have an Apple iPhone. Then you get somebody else's Apple iPhone. Do you have this app on your phone? Yes, I do. Okay, use that app. And that person picks that phone up and they're like, what is this shit? Right? Because they just have them in a different order.
Right.
And all of a sudden you feel like you're looking at some foreign object. It's literally the same phone. It's got the same three apps on it you use every day, but they're in a different place.
Right.
And I think a lot of, if you will think about that when you're learning a new tech, like when I first got my first Above book from Above Phone, like it's a little bit, it's still the, it's a laptop, right? Or if you go, like if you've always used a PC even and you go over to a MacBook, you're like, what is this two-finger bullshit? Like, you know, why can't I delete the way that I normally delete? What is this? What is this command option bullshit versus control? Like, but it's really not. It's really not that hard.
It is definitely doable. The things which I would say, though, primarily would be, just like I say with Bitcoin, right? Not life savings. Start small, but do something. Take an action. Get stuff started. That is really the goal that I would say. So if you're interested in learning about Bitcoin, Bitcoin Pivot's a great place. If you've got questions on StartOS or any of the stuff we talked about, feel free to reach out to me.
Yeah.
You know, this is not a me working in the coal mine. I have to slave to do this job, right? I do this stuff because this is the stuff that brings me joy. This is the stuff that I really like doing. Getting this out in the world, having other people be successful with this is why I do this, right?
Jesse's all about self-sovereignty, guys. He's been here enough times. We've had enough, like, over a beer conversations that, like, that is the passion that drives him, is giving you control over your own life and destiny if you want it. Because you can't give sovereignty to somebody that doesn't want it, right? That's not a doable thing. We have one more question for you before I let you go. SR Jack says, do you think Start 9 should include subscriptions? And I think that kind of goes against their model, but I was thinking when you were talking about these side directories that it might be an incentive for developers to develop certain things if, you know, it wasn't a subscription, but because now we're going into the evil of the app store, and if you don't pay, it doesn't work. But maybe this thing that you said you want is worth $10, or you didn't really want it. And so I think that maybe there is, like, I think that it would go completely against everything we're trying to do if I got to pay you $9 a month. But if it's a really complex app and I really, really want it, maybe it's worth $50.
Yeah, there's a bunch of apps that I pay for, that, and there's actually a bunch of stuff that's open source now that I've started donating to the projects because I respect and appreciate the work that they've done. They've allowed me to cancel another subscription, and so I'm happy to be valued for that. I have had conversations in the past, specifically with Matt Hill, founder of Start 9, and the topic of subscriptions came up, and the answer was no. That was the extent of that conversation.
Yeah.
The commentary that he made on it was, we want to know basically as little about our customers as we possibly can.
Yeah.
To protect them, and because we don't want, it's not our business. Our business is not monetizing your data. Our business is giving you freedom, giving you the tools you need to fight for your own freedom. That is the Start 9 attitude. So there is a, I guess you could call it a subscription. There's a one-time fee to get access to the support site and lifetime support if you buy the server from Start 9.
Yeah.
And I could easily see at some point, if you are a business and you need a higher level of support than, you know, go into the forum and chat with people, whatever, you want to be able to call up the phone and say, my system's down, help me, walk me through this. Yeah. That might be a subscription model, but that would be more like a business tier. That's not like the normal
person. Or like a Linux Red Hat thing where you hire somebody to do the job, right? Or like, you know. The WordPress has people who are beyond making a plugin that they're, you know, custom WordPress experts that will, like, if I want my intranet to do this thing that's built on WordPress, and they'll build that for you for a fee.
Right.
And I think that we do need, I understand what Matt's doing, and I totally get it. And I totally like the idea of, we do not want to be connected to you for life, and nor do we want you connected to an app provider for life by some sort of economic tether. But I also think that, like, you can't have a system that runs well without properly aligned incentives.
Yes.
And people value their time, and people that can do the kind of shit you're talking about can make money writing code for somebody that will pay for it. So if you want them to code for this, passion only takes you so far. Dedication to a cause only takes you so far. Having some sort of economic incentive in there, I think, makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I see a question asking about, like, what will Start 9 run on? It's a great question.
Yeah.
Start 9 actually has specific hardware that's designed and optimized to run Start OS. But if you get any old x86, whatever, as long as it's got reasonable drivers, it's a very good bet that that would just work. There's a community forum where, you know, for the do-it-yourselfers who did not buy the server from Start OS, from Start 9, who didn't do any of that stuff, you know, help each other out. They say, this is the version that I got. This is what happened. This is what worked. There's a whole bunch of known good models that folks have tried. It worked. It's been great. And, you know, I right now have 2 Start 9 boxes that I've bought directly from Start 9. I've got 2 others that I bought just, you know, Amazon.com was on sale, right? Yeah. For a little mini PC. I bought it, upgraded some memory. I'm running on that. There are Raspberry Pis that can run Start OS. And starting with 0.4.0, you can also run it on a RISC, RISC V. So RISC is the reduced instruction set computers. So it's still very new. It's still whatever. There's not a lot out there. It's potentially somewhat more buggy because there's just less people running it. But pretty much, if you've got it, if you want to run it, it's worth taking a shot. Oh, and in virtual machines. I mentioned before running it in Proxmox. I also run it in virtual machines as well. Yeah. So if you want to try it, download it, run it. It's great stuff just to experiment with.
All right, guys. Well, first of all, let's thank Jesse for being here today. Second of all, if this has brought up some questions in your mind, send them to me, jackofthesurvivalpodcast.com, with TSPC expert in the subject line, and say, my question is for expert council member Jesse Markowitz, and give me your question in one sentence. Always send me your question in a single
that
sentence.
Helps.
Then you know what you're asking. Then we know what you're asking. If you have 2 questions, make 2 sentences separate. Then give us details. We will be able to help you much better that way. And I need content from the expert council. That comes from you guys sending it to me and me sending it to them. So please do that. Number 2, I will make sure the Bitcoin Pivot and all of Jesse's links, like your personal Bitcoin assistant, et cetera, are in the show notes today. If you're watching the video, right down there in the description is a link. It goes over to my website. Over there, you'll find all those resources. If we're still live and you click it right now, it won't work yet because we're not done yet. It takes me about 30 minutes once I sign off to get that side up for you. Jesse, thank you for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Great to be here.
All right, real quick as we wrap up. That went 2 hours. I had no expectation that it would, but it did. I want to let you guys know about the item of the day, and this is a good one. I have sold a lot of these. Everybody that's bought them is happy. And everybody that I know in real life that carries an EDC light, I would say 90% of them carry this light, is the Olight Artfield Ultra EDC flashlight. When I say the people I know in real life, I'm talking like my buddy David you hear about all the time. He carries one of these. My buddy JR, who helps set up everything for the workshops, he carries one of these. Everybody carries one of these. There's only been one downside to this so far, and that is I've been to some places with security that they see it and they're like, yeah, man, you can bring your vape pen in, but you can't vape in here. Bro, it's a flashlight. Yeah, man, but you can't vape. Okay, fine. I won't vape with my flashlight. Other than that, it's fantastic. It's got a very bright light, 3 settings to preserve battery life or to, you know, not be so bright. It's also got this really cool laser pointer. And I don't know if I can get that to go into the camera just right there. But anyway, it does. Laser pointers are actually very useful in ways I think a lot of people don't think about. Like when you are doing a presentation or something, that's where people think. But like when you have a contractor over and you're like, I want this thing fixed on the eve. And they say, sure. Do they actually know what you're talking about? If you run any kind of a job site, my buddy David is like super high level PM type guy. And so like when you're walking around with your crews, They're actually really useful for things like that and instructing. And when you're talking to somebody and you're telling them there's something out there and they can't see it, it's really nice to be able to, it's right there, dude. And then it has a UV light. But why is it such a good deal today? It's on sale. And it's on sale for $70. This is a $120 light. That's $50 off the price of one of the best EDC lights you can own. It also has magnetic charging. That means it never goes bad. Nothing ever gets into it. It's just a little magnet sticks to it, and it charges up from a standard kind of like USB charging port. But this is a proprietary charger. You can buy two of them for $9 aftermarket. Okay, so that's not a hurdle. That is a feature, not a bug. These things are great. And hey, you know what? Olight's so cool. They'll even send you a challenge coin when you buy an Olight Arcfield Ultra. So check this guy out again. It's part of Prime Days or something like that, and probably that pricing doesn't stick around. This is a premium product that routine, like when it goes on sale, it's usually like $100. Retail $120 day to day. Down to $70, that's cheap. Get it while you can. With that, I'll go ahead and sign up. Just a reminder, Laws of Life, Book 2, Now Build the System for Your Life. This goes on sale on Amazon on Tuesday next week, the 30th. Please, if you're going to pick it up, consider picking it up right on launch day. Help me have a good launch. Help me climb up those bestseller lists like we did last year with the first book. That helps me reach a lot more people when that happens. This book, if you liked even a little bit book one, you're going to love this. It is a total upgrade. Again, the reason there's a second edition so fast after the first isn't just to fix errors. It was this book made me realize I didn't do a good enough job in the first one. It is that good. This is really an operator's guide to life. If you have a young person, you're like 15 to 35, that just needs a little kick in the rear end. You know me, I'm good at that. Get this for them. Consider picking up one as a gift, or two as a gift, or three as a gift. Let's have a great launch next week. Again, Laws of Life, Book 2, Now Build the System for Your Life. And I am getting on all these other platforms I didn't know about that I can do as a self-published author. Google Books is a nightmare. I'm doing what I can. I mean, it's like they don't actually want you to do the things they say they want you to do. Everything's a login and a security and on it goes. But I'm on Google Play already with this book for the ebook. And I am also now on Barnes & Noble with the first book and the ebook, and this will be coming to that as well. So if you just hate Amazon, there'll be other options. But next week, man, we got to make a big splash on Amazon. It's the biggest dog in the fight, so to speak. Thanks everybody for tuning in today. Appreciate Jesse being with us. Take care, guys, and I will catch you with another episode tomorrow. We won't be live because it will be an expert counsel Q&A show for you.
He traded the sales tie and the corporate grind for muddy boots and that Texas sunshine. Dorothy by his side on a 3-acre spread, 9-mile farmstead where the good life gets fed. 18 years of pockets dropping truth every day, helping you live better, tough times or not. That's what he'd say. Calls himself a redneck hippie duck farmer, y'all, with a jerk of a smile. Standing tall, redneck hippie duck farmer, down on 9 Mile Way, biochar in the garden like a bomb shelter for the clay, ducks on the pond, pasture eggs in the pan, food forest growing while he lends a helping hand, ditch the system, design your life, that's the law he wrote, stacking silver, stacking sats, shotgun by showing us how to live it right. Biochar's a coral reef for the critters down deep. Bioreactor compost turning scraps into gold. We keep ducks, do the work, fertilize forage, keep the pests away. Regenerative magic on that good old Texas clay. Guns and hunting wisdom from the fathers before. When the fiat hits the floor, AI on the horizon, but he keeps his boots on the ground.
up in Estes Park snow. He's up at 5 a.m. writing Laws of Life, don't you know?
Book one, ditch the system.
Design it your own way.
A mill, build the system.
Work it every day.
Preparedness ain't crazy, it's just being grown. Responsible adulting in the world we've been shown. Charlie and Max on patrol, food, forest, and bloom. Community learning how to thrive with some room. Redneck, hippie, duck farmer. Down on 9 Mile Way. Biochar in the garden like a bomb shelter for the clay. Ducks on the pond, pastured eggs in the pan. Food forest growing while he lends a helping hand. Ditch the system, design your life, that's the law he wrote. Stacking silver, stacking sats, shotgun by the door, y'all. Independence, autonomy, the self-reliance. Showing us how to live it right. From the YouTube days to the TSP throne, 15 plus years of knowledge and he's still going strong. Here's to Jack and Dorothy and that duck farmer life, living better every day through the struggle and the strife. Redneck hippie duck farmer.
Jack Spurko, y'all. Set us free.